So let's go on with our last concept in top-down parsing, which is the right regular context-free parsing. So we emanate from a situation that you see in the first example here, where we find a grammar that does something actually really useful for a lot of purposes in programming languages, namely building up lists of something. In our case, the something would be like this little terminal A. However, you could imagine any other symbol there, also some non-terminal that spawns some other content. So usually there is some information that you attach to lists via that, whereas with a thing like B you put a separator between all of them, and with S you recurse into the same production again and again and again. So you build up, accumulate your list until you finally terminate that with the last separator here. Yeah, so this is a quite typical pattern that you find in grammar engineering in order to implement lists of things. However, there's a clear downside of that thing, since the pattern that you see here is actually left recursive, and well, that is a bummer for LLK parsing, since left recursive things are usually considered to be not handleable with any finite look-ahead window. Okay, so again, think a little bit about this problem. You might wonder, well, lists of things, building up repetitions of elements, that is a pretty easy concept. We have seen that already a little early on, particularly in regular expressions. So you might wonder whether just our way of expressing right-hand sides is a little bit limited. So you might think about what happens if you instead go over to regular expressions as right-hand sides. And this carries you right into the topic of right regular context-free grammars. This is just ordinary context-free grammars where, like, these parts of our quadruple remain the same. Non-terminals, terminals, and start symbol are still the ones that you need to take over from the last concept. What changes is in the productions, where now the right-hand sides are chosen from the regular expressions of symbols. Okay? So, just as an example, you can have a look at this little fellow over here, which is just, well, that is the arithmetic expressions once again. I don't know whether you by now remember our original arithmetic expressions grammar, which was particularly nasty for our usual LL parsing, since it contained left recursion. Now, with our idea of regular expressions, we see that by introducing these list-generating regular expressions on the right-hand side, we can just build up lists of these additive terms or lists of multiplicative terms without a cost of recursion. Thus, we have already gotten rid of one thing that buggered us. So the question is now, in order for that to work, do we need some more advanced concepts of parsing? How does that relate to our old concepts, it turns out? There's a way to rewrite rules from such an right-hand side regular grammar to an ordinary grammar by, well, just doing essentially grammar rule rewriting. So for that, you introduce, well, these special kinds of brackets for, like, the transformed grammar. And this transformed grammar now is blown up by a lot more symbols that are created from old syntax forms here. So it's sequences of Well, it's syntax forms made up from regular expressions, so it's like you, when in your original write regular context-free grammar, you had some right-hand side containing a regular expression, you would take that as literally the identifier for that characterizes a new non-terminal, the thing, mark it left and right with these new kind of brackets, and introduce it as a non-terminal symbol in a new grammar that is introduced with the intention of setting up a pure LLK grammar. Yeah. So how that works in particular is you transfer, or well, you transform rules from the old grammar into the new grammar by, first of all, tagging right-hand sides completely just with our new brackets, and introduce other rules that transform these new symbols back to old ones and constructs on the old ones. So if I happen to have marked non-terminal or terminal with these brackets, I can just simply add a new rule that reverts them back to the old symbol. If I happened to have marked an empty rule, I would just create a rule that will map back to empty. And if I then introduce these fellows over here, we will introduce mappings back to their decomposed form, where we have reverted the marks, the markings to like smaller components of the whole thing, while keeping, for example, for the concatenation case, the concatenation here in the right-hand sides, whereas for the variations, we keep those also in these right-hand sides of these newly added rules. So with that, we can, if we apply that to an ordinary LLK grammar, we will just, well, blow up the number of productions a little bit, but still essentially remain in the same thing. The crucial thing is how this transformation now handles the repetition, like the clean stir. And this will add a special production to the whole system that either maps to epsilon, which is like when we want to skip the repetition of the marked syntax form, or, well, I happened to have erased like the alternation symbol, so either we let the list collapse into nothing, or we add one repetition together with the new symbol that might produce further repetitions. Yeah, and with that we have mapped these list productions to a right recursive pattern, which is not particularly difficult for LL parsers to handle, and still are able to express lists. Yeah. You might now wonder how such a thing works in practice. So I've sketched a little transformation like this here for the example of the arithmetic expressions. Yeah. So this is the proposal for how arithmetic expressions can be parsed from the last slide. So for those, well, in principle, I would need to now transform each and every right-hand side of a grammar due to that rule. However, since this one here doesn't have any regular expressions involved. This would just mean that I would go through like this production again. So this was just a chain of unary productions. So I will skip this one. This won't add any functionality to the grammar. So just keep that like that and focus on rewriting ones that are actually really exciting to look, to treat. So this would be, for example, this one with an actual list production. So what do I have to do for these ones? Well, the first step is usually let's have a look. We have to tag the whole right-hand side of this production. So that's what we're going to do here. So there we have tagged this right-hand side, thus introduced one singular new non-terminal that is like this lengthy form. So all of that is like now one non-terminal. Yeah, one symbol. Okay, and also what we need to do is now say how this non-terminal is rewritten. Or well, it's not written, but what are the productions for this non-terminal? And that's what we can then get by looking at this non-terminal as a new left-hand side of a rule. And, well, what we see is that we have to the dominant operation inside that is like the concatenation. So the first thing that we will be doing is we will take the rule from over here for the concatenations and apply it so that we can get the concatenation of smaller symbols. So this will create essentially this new symbol, as this was one of the parts of the concatenation, as well as one for this. However, this is again a case of that rule here, so I will already inline this unary this unary production into just keeping this T over here, because this is just not particularly contributing, but blows up our grammar. However, the one that's more interesting is the one over here, which is a then new non-terminal to introduce. Yeah, so we focus now on this one. This one is new. We need to define how to handle that, and that is what we do again by consulting these sets of rules. And here the dominant operation is the repetition, so we choose this one for a new rule to introduce, which is then this one here. And this one had two times the old symbol in there, so that's what we introduce here. This one we already have a production for, so we don't need to reintroduce that. However, this one still needs to be produced, so that's what we're going to do in the next set, on the next production. Yeah. So with that, we have reached like again situation where we have in principle tagged unary symbols. Which I said, due to these simple rules, I will just inline those in direct symbols and don't pursue that any further. Yeah, in principle, you would have to do that. However, due to space reasons on the slides, I won't do that. Okay, so with that, we have completely handled that branch of upcoming productions from the first repetition. now turns out that we still haven't looked at all the old productions. We still have to look at particularly this one here. And this has a similar form as the one before. So this, we can maybe do it in a similar way. And turns out this will introduce, first of all, again, similar to above, a new non-terminal with a complete right-hand side, and then probably a whole bunch of productions similar to those. And yeah, that's what's happening here. Yeah, so it's exactly the same set of productions added to the whole thing than before. Yeah. So with that, we just have this last thing remaining, and this doesn't have any actual repetitions in there, so we can just usually go through it and replace all the tagged things. Well, in principle, we'd have to tag them first and then remove the tag again, and yeah, well, we will we won't do that here. In principle, we get the situation that we have here when we do a lot of grammar optimization after on a little bit later by just removing a lot of these unary productions and inlining a lot of these symbols directly in there. Yeah. Anyway, this is a thing that you would then do after you've done this transformation. There's no need to actually keep these lengthy labeled non-terminals around, but you would then just take some fresh non-terminal that you haven't touched before, like introduce an A for this one and rewrite also this thing here with A, then introduce B for that one, write B here, and so on. Like here you could rewrite it to C, this is then C. Again, this is C, this will become D, and this is D, and so on. So on. With that, you get like more readable grammars, and yeah, with those, you get the impression that there's nothing special in there that makes the thing any different from any other LL grammar. Yeah? Okay. So, this is one way of implementing the write regular LL grammar things. However, you might wonder whether there's a more direct way of coming to a parser from these concepts. Yeah? So, let's have a look. And yeah, so first of all, for the grammar, we have the a shorter name, which is this RLL1 that we there is, and there's always a corresponding grammar to that that we can generate with the scheme that we have seen on the last slide that will then produce an LL1 grammar out of an RLL1 grammar. Okay? So this can then be directly used in our LL1 parser generator, and we're in principle then completely done with that. Yeah? Okay. However, there's still recursion in there, namely write recursion, which will still iterate through the stack for the complete length of the list each time that there is a list involved in that, and this might be quite well excessive, so to say. So you might wonder whether there is a better direct construction of a parser after that. And indeed there is, which is like this second idea, which is the idea of recursive descent RLL parsers. So this now is an alternative to these table-driven parsers that we have seen, and all that they consist of is like the interface to the scanner with this scan function, and the actual RL1 grammar itself, and it's just a function that that rewrites the productions of such a grammar into actual real code. So this is just rewriting grammar into code directly. Yeah. For that we need like a little bit of an environment, like the parse method and the expect method. It's just like a little bit of an infrastructure on that. So first of all, we will buffer the first element of the input into next, which is like a little bit of a look ahead window of size 1 for our parser. Then what else there is this expect method. The expect method is given a set of symbols that are expected to be the next input symbols. So this is like a sanity checking function in order to make sure that we don't accept any wrong input. And how that works is that we intersect the given set with the look ahead symbol from the input. Let's for now ignore this epsilon and see whether that intersects. If this does not intersect, then we know that our parser has expected a particular input, however found only one other thing, and it's a reason to abort. So this will just exit with 0, and in the other case this will just return to, just now. So there's no reason for a boolean return. This is just void. Yeah. Okay. So the other thing that we need is an entry point into the parsing, which is gonna be the parse method down there. And well, this sets up parsing by first of all just reading the first symbol from the input into our look ahead window. And then what you usually do in top-down parsing is you try to parse expanding on the first symbol. However, you still need to make sure that the first symbol is actually really viable for the current input in the look ahead, and that's what we can do with a first call to our expect method. So we see whether we find any symbol in the input that can be expected for as a yield for S, and at the beginning of that yield, of course, so the first symbol of the yield of S needs to be there for a sane call to this S here, and that's what the expect does. Now, how do we do the actual expansion? That's what this method call to S is going to be for. So far, we don't know what this S is going to be. That is a thing that we will see on the next slide. After we're done with S, we expect the end of file being reached. Yeah. So that is all to the parse methods. All it will do is it will call the S method, which is a mysterious method that we see introduced over here. Since for every production that there is in the grammar, we will generate a new function that is that has as signature just the name of the non-terminal at the left-hand side, and as a body, we just have a generation of whatever the right-hand side of the rule for this grammar is. And well, since we are talking about these grammars in the context of right regular grammars, we consider this alpha to contain all the variants already covered with like the alternation operator in there. So there's just one production for each non-terminal. So all the right-hand sides flow over into this generate thing. Okay, so with that, it's clear what the mysterious call to S from the framework before is, because like S is always our marker for the start state. Well, I guess if you're really exact, it would have to be S prime, but yeah, as that. So we are sure that such an S method exists, and the question is now, what does the generate do for a method body for that thing? Well, it decomposes its parameter, may it be, for example, a composition of right-hand side components. In that case, what it will do is it will map generate to the component, the first component. Then in concatenation, what should happen is, after being done with R1, you would have to expect that the input now matches the first symbol, the first possible symbol of a yield of R2, before then generating content for matching R2, expecting again, and then so on, until we expect the last symbol in the concatenation and map to generate appropriate code for the last symbol. Good. So, now what remains is to say how to generate code for the smaller right-hand side fractions. And there's the easy ones, like the empty string, which is just no code. Yeah, so that's nothing particular. The terminal symbol, which would just consist in matching that particular symbol. The actual matching is already done in the expect part that precedes the whole thing. The only thing then needs to be that we will actually have to reload our look ahead window to point to the next thing, which we can done by scanning and putting and overriding the next buffer field in our infrastructure. And in case that we hit a non-terminal, we will just call the handler for that particular non-terminal that we have generated a little ago via this one. Yeah? Okay. So, that's not all that right-hand side can consist of. There's, of course, the repetition of a particular component R, which, well, repetition can be a thing that a loop might be well suited for. So that's why we have like this while loop here, where in the main body we will just have the appropriate code to handle our subcomponent R. The question is now, how long do we loop? And well, in order to actually really loop, we will look at the epsilon free first set of R, why the epsilon set, the epsilon free first set. Well, for once, next will never be epsilon, since that's always like a valid token in that sense. Also, if epsilon is actually really part of the first one set of R, well, then we will have an infinite loop. So this is not a very goal-driven parsing run that you get when you iterate through all that. So as for our semantics of how to translate this thing, we will always just find that this the non-productive expansions won't just be done for this parser. Yeah. Okay, so with that, we have a scheme of handling the repetition. Then there is the alternation between R1 and RK. And for that, we can then again make use of the first symbol in order to check whether whether each of those is actually really viable to choose. So we will check these first sets and compare them to our look ahead window, which is in this next thing. And we can make use of a switching statement for that by just putting like all the elements of the first list into labels. So the first set, if it contains some terminals, we will then map that to label of that particular terminal, which is then usually just case and the terminal itself. Yeah, so this is switching on the symbols. Depending on how you encoded your symbols, this might be a little bit of thing to still work on, but usually you can find some way of associating terminals with numeric values if your language doesn't support any other switching like that, or you might have a big enumeration for that. I don't know what works best for you for your language, but in principle you could do so. And for epsilon, this would be like the default case, and be done with that. The only thing that you now need to do then is provide the handler for these subcomponents, and you do them within the code part of each of the cases before you do an actual break out of the switch. Yeah, okay, so that's that. And with that, you have a quite decent implementation already of an LL parser, a quite direct implementation of an parser even more. So, to sum up top-down parsing here now, let's have a few words on that. So one thing that we have seen is a practical implementation of an RLL1 parser via recursive descent. So this is a pretty straightforward idea, pretty simple to do, as long as you are able to do your first one sets. Yeah. However, we've also seen that there's downsides to that. If you have left recursive grammars, these are not suitable for parsing that way. You would have to find your way around these left recursion parts and reformulate them in another way. There is a few transformations that might help you there, but if there's no way around such a construct, then you're doomed in that sense. Also, there's other reasons for grammars not being parsable with LLK. So yeah, you might not be able to find your way around all problematic rules that there are, but still you can have a pretty decent go at recursive descent parsers. Yeah. The most crucial problem is arising as soon as these first one sets are not disjoint anymore. In our construction here, this would lead to like multiple labels, and if you just stupidly generate with that scheme here, you won't even notice that if your compiler doesn't tell you that there's several cases for the same numeral. So if you run into overlapping first one sets for alternatives, well, you might wonder what you do then. And well, there's several ways out of that. So first of all, there's this idea of reformulating your grammars. Usually there are some quite humanly readable grammars out there that are quite prone to overlapping first one sets. A very prominent example would be things like statement that goes to if expression statement like this, and the other variant if expression statement else statement. So this is very nice for from a human perspective. However, it has overlapping prefix of like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 symbols until you finally get to decide that those variants are different. So what you do in these you is that you usually try to keep the common prefixes. This is what these yellow parts are all about, in one alternative, and then do this branching between the two separate parts via dedicated symbol, like what you could do in our case is you could start with a statement, goes to if e statement, and then have something like an artificial else opt non-terminal, which would then do the branching to a semicolon or else statement semicolon like this, and that way you have your first sets disjoint for that variation. Yeah. Okay, so this is one way of dealing with a particular sort of overlapping first sets. Another solution that is out there is to tinker around with our ways of specifying grammars and interpreting grammars and go over to so-called ranked grammars. They would, in case of deciding of conflicting look ahead, always favor a particular alternative. Yeah. So even if there is overlapping, there is a clear decision made by just, well, probably by the precision in the sequence in which they are specified. What's not so clear with such an approach is how they relate to LL parsing at all. So it's not so clear what the expressibility of these things actually is. Also, not so clear on how list productions are done with that. So, Yeah, that's a whole different deal here. The other way that you could try to solve this thing is, well, if a look ahead of one symbol is not enough, then increase it. Go to some other larger k that is able to cope with that. In the example of this if-then-else problem, however, this is a little bit problematic. You can't do that for that one, since the then statement might yield arbitrarily many terminals, so a constant number of terminals in the look-ahead won't really help you in that case. That's already an example for which this doesn't really work. Another thing is that if you increase, if you try to set up larger look-ahead sets, we've only seen how to set up the look-aheads of set of size 1. For others, you need to do considerable more work. There's like inequality systems that characterize these things that are more complicated. Like the right-hand sides are not just variables and numbers, but rather they are like more complex terms, which are then only able to be solved via fixed point iteration on these variables. And also you can imagine that the values that they get out of that are now not just sets of just single terminals, but for the size of look-ahead size of 2, so k is equal to 2, for example, you already get pairs of terminals as the components of such lists, and you can imagine you can find much more many more different sets of pairs of terminals than just sets of terminals. And if you do like triples or quadruples of terminals, you get soon your value set for your look-aheads explode. So there's a lot of different look-aheads that you would have to compute, and they're actually exponential in number of k. So you tend to not like to use very large k's in practice. So usually a look-ahead size of 1 or 2 is still feasible. With 3 and 4, it already is quite excessive, and with that you won't have like runs of your parser that are in interactive environment, for example. So these look-ahead set computations tend to overshadow the complete rest of the compiler as soon as you get growing k's. So this is not a thing that you really like to do. There's other ideas related to the look-ahead, which is this the concepts of regular look-ahead. So LL parsing that just doesn't do a finite window of look-ahead symbols checking, but instead it uses regular expressions and match the rest of the input with that regular expression for differentiating between different alternatives. So this is an interesting one, since it greatly increases the expressivity in the sense of, well, the languages that you can parse with that concept. However, for me it's not really clear how that relates to the LL or LRK grammar hierarchies. However, what you get with that is that you actually have to carry out this look-ahead comparison in terms of matching an possibly quite long fraction prefix of the input with a regular expression or like some finite automaton. Thus, reading input is not a linear thing anymore, but instead turns to be possibly, well, I don't know how many repetitions you would get out of that, but it's for sure not linear anymore. And that might be a thing that you also don't want to rely upon too heavily. Yeah. So in practical systems, if you do just your quick, dirty little LL-based parser, you would usually probably just try to come up with your look-aheads of size one only, and try to use a recursive decent implementation of the right regular grammar with that. Yeah, and thus this already gets you quite far. However, there's more to parsing than just top-down parsing, and that's what we're going to see in the next block of modules. So with that, we're done with top-down parsing, and yeah, feel good about that probably.